You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
Hi, everyone. So my guest today is Lisa Kitchens, who's a wonderful actor and teacher and creator. I'm going to talk more about her in just a moment, but I'm just going to muse for a minute. We're in the midst of this COVID-19 quarantine, shelter in place. I hope you're all doing well. Frankie and I are fine. We're here with the baby in New York, which is a little scary since it's the center of so many of the cases of the virus. But we're safe at home. I'm so glad he's here. He was supposed to be leaving to do another play in New Jersey, and I'm just glad that we weren't in the middle of that and we were together. That play has been postponed, but all for the best. I hope everyone's staying home, listening to lots of podcasts, and getting some rest. I know it's been interesting for Frankie and I because as parents, honestly, like, we don't have a lot of extra time. It doesn't feel that way during this this time of staying in place. Sussie keeps us very busy throughout the day. I'm working from home from my day job, which I'm very grateful for right now. It's not a job I necessarily want to be doing, but I'm really grateful for the fact that I can work from home right now. I'm sorry if you're working in the gig economy or the restaurant work right now. I'm sure that's so difficult, and I'm thinking about you. But I've been seeing and I'm very inspired by all of these initiatives people have been starting on Instagram, teaching dance classes, sharing, holding events online. But honestly, I haven't really been able to take part in any of them because I still have a lot on my plate. And I saw this poem online that I wanted to share. It's by Emma Zeck. Somebody had reposted it on Instagram. You might have seen it. But it just really struck a chord with me in not feeling like we need to put pressure on ourselves to be a certain kind of productive during this time. If you're feeling that and it's working for you, fantastic. But if you're not, just, it's okay. This is a scary time and it's all okay. So this is the poem. With this open time, you do not have to write the next best-selling novel. You do not have to get in the best shape of your life. You do not have to start that podcast. What you can do instead is observe this pause as an opportunity. The same systems we see crumbling in society are being called to crumble in each of us individually. The systems that taught us we are machines that live to produce and we are disposable if we are not doing so. The systems that taught us monetary gain takes priority over humanity. The systems that create our insecurities and capitalize off of them. What if we became curious with this free time and had no agenda other than to experience being? What if you created art for the sake of creating? What if you allowed yourself to rest and cry and laugh and play and get curious about whatever arises in you? What if our true purpose is in this space? As if Mother Earth is saying, we can no longer carry on this way. The time is now. I am reminding you who you are. Will you remember? And again, that's by Emma Zeck. So take care of yourselves. We'll keep checking in. I'm still planning to put out the podcast every 2 weeks. We'll see if I get it together to put out something a little more often. Lisa was the last guest. Lisa Kitchens, my guest this week, was the last guest I had over to my apartment before all of this happened. I'm lucky that I can still record online. I have one other episode recorded that we recorded in person with Kathleen McNenney and Boyd Gaines, which I'll put out soon, which Frankie and I talked to them together all about managing parenting as artists. But Lisa was the last person I had over to my apartment to record, and we got to talk about this wonderful project that she started. It's called Earth Stories Initiative. You can find it at earthstoriesinitiative.org. And it's all about connecting young kids who live in cities to the natural world through storytelling. So she's becoming an entrepreneur. She's a wonderful teacher and actor, as I said. We didn't overlap at the University of Evansville. She started there kind of right after I graduated. But check it out. She also has a wonderful newsletter called Seeds that talks all about activities you can do with your kids at home, resources, which might be helpful in this time in particular. I hope you enjoy the 154th episode of The Compass. makes me think a lot about, like, what the dark side is for me and what the dark side is for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the dark side is living in my head and living in, like, a place of anxiety or a place of, you know, needing somebody's approval or needing to be good or right or any of those, like, you know, but just seeking approval and not really listening to myself. And I also have the tendency to just overanalyze things and be in my head about things or living in a constant to-do list without, like, giving myself space to, like, actually live instead of planning every minute of my day. And that is definitely the dark side for me. And what I do to kind of get out of it, that's the question, right?
Yeah.
Getting out of the dark side, okay.
To get out of it, to try to keep from going there.
Yeah.
All of the above.
I mean, I feel like it's a constant process and, like, reevaluation of where I am in life and what helps in this moment in time. But certainly giving myself stillness. And a lot of times that means, for me, finding a place that's quiet.
Mm.
And that sometimes is oftentimes nature or getting out of the city or being someplace in my apartment, you know, that I feel very still, where I can hear myself, hear sounds that, you know, I don't feel closed in a way. And also, like, I think through that, when I'm able to give myself, like, that, the space to really listen, that is when I feel my sense of curiosity. Like, that was something I was thinking about over here. I was like, I think when I'm really in a dark place is when I'm not feeling curious about things.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Because that really is, like, the basis
of
being an artist, right?
Totally. Like, that's...
Or really being a human.
Yeah, we're not exactly.
As, not always as aware of it.
Certainly, yeah. And yeah, that's, like, what I have going for me, is that I'm curious. And when I really lose that, I think I'm not in a healthy healthy place, usually. Yeah.
And so finding that alone time and that stillness.
Yeah. Yeah. And connecting with my curiosity, you know? And oftentimes that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily doing something to, like, further my career or, I mean, oftentimes it's just, what am I curious about today? What am I interested in today? Or what am I don't know if that makes sense, but there's something in just
giving yourself the freedom to kind of get off of the track for a minute.
Yeah, off of the track, off of my to-do list, off of my, like, incessant need to plan and just exist and take, I mean, you know, follow that lead.
Yeah.
That's when I'm certainly happiest, and I think when I'm taking the best care of myself and when I'm able to be the most present with the people around me.
So you've lived in the city for quite a while now, right? When did you graduate grad school?
Graduated grad school in 2014, but I originally moved here right out of college in 2010. And then I went to graduate school in San Francisco, and then I moved here in 2014.
Okay.
So.
How are you feeling about the city right now?
I have, like, a love-hate relationship with it. When I first moved here in 2010, I was, like, head over heels. I loved it. And when I was in San Francisco, which people think this is crazy, but I was like, it's no New York. You know, I was always comparing it. I was like, this is not New York. It'll never be New York. I can't wait to go back to New York. And then, you know, when I moved back here, I was like, oh, it's not California. It's not
right.
San Francisco. It's not that
the
beautiful
grass
city.
Is always greener.
Exactly. But New York, you know, in a lot of ways, it's the first place outside of Georgia, which is where I'm from, that I have felt like is my home.
And that's kind of a, for better or for worse, like that is my reality. And I really feel like, especially in the past several years, I've started making roots here that are really meaningful to me, that I don't really think I'll be here the rest of my life. I don't know what will happen. Maybe I will. But for now, it feels like home, and this is where I am, you know?
Yeah. There's so many things I want to talk to you about, but a big thing that I wanted to talk to you about was this project that you're working on right now, this company kind of that you're launching, Earth Stories. Mm-hmm. And I guess I might as well dive into it right away, because I was asking about the city, and I'm so curious about how environment influences people's artistic lives, their lives in general, but their artistic thoughts. And you can tell the listeners a little bit more about what Earth Stories is, but it's all about teaching kids who live in cities about nature, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just interesting that you're living in a city right now. And
it is.
You find so much peace in nature. I grew up in the woods in Michigan. Yeah. I definitely an interesting thing to have that one place I grew up until college was so rooted in nature, and now to like live in and love a city, but to miss it at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about that all the time. I think about where my work has kind of led me, and if a city is really where I want to be. But for now it is. I think this is where I really feel called to work as well, in a city. But to talk about kind of what I'm doing, Earth Stories, yes, it is this initiative that I started. And it is about connecting young children who live in the city with limited access to nature, connecting them to the natural world using storytelling. So it all started with a play that I created last year, or I guess 2018. Oh my gosh, it's been 2 years.
just a little bit of 2020.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, that's crazy. It all started with a play I created out of an experience I had as an artist in residence in Alaska through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And
already so many questions about that. Keep going and I'll come back to it.
Basically for the residency, I had to kind of submit a proposal of what I wanted to do. And this was around the time I was really starting to think a lot about my life as an artist here and working with children so much. I was teaching a lot more at this point and wrestling with this question of, do I want to be in the city? I feel like I'm being suffocated every day. And at the same time, you know, I was also finding a lot of meaning and value in my relationships and what I was doing. And this question came about, which was, how can these children that I'm working with, or children that I'm not working with, how can these children living in this city, how can they really begin to have a meaningful relationship with our natural world, especially since they aren't really experiencing any of it? And like you said, like growing up in Michigan, I grew up in rural Georgia. Like that was my daily life.
Yeah, completely.
It was my backyard. That was my existence, was being in nature. And it was formative for me growing up, getting to play in the dirt, climbing trees. Like,
yeah, me too.
And children here or in other cities don't have that opportunity. And not to say that one is better than the other. I don't think that's true. But I do think there can be room and space, and we need to make the space for children in the city specifically to care about our planet. And how can we help support relationships with it, especially if they have limited resources of like accessing it, you know, if they aren't able to go to a park, or to a national park or a wilderness, or even like getting outside of the city at all.
Or even to Central Park.
Yeah. Even to Central Park.
Or Prospect Park or something, exactly. Just depending on where you live.
Yeah, exactly.
As a kid, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah. There was a real desire to help support children creating relationships with our planet. And that was kind of so where it all stemmed from.
Did that kind of, that kind of came to you when you were thinking up your project for that residency? Or was that really more after the fact, looking back on it?
Nah, it was kind of, I don't know if the idea ever just came to me really clearly in the moment. Like, I think it was a over time. Mm-hmm. But no, I was thinking about it before I even applied to go to Alaska. I was, I had the 2 years before I had, worked on a farm in Montana for a summer, and I, it was right outside of Glacier National Park. And this was like an incredible experience for me that just kind of shifted a lot in my life. And I was, this was around the time I was like, oh, I don't know if I need to be in a city. I want to be in nature. And, this was also around the time I was teaching a lot, and there was something there that I just wasn't fully recognizing, but I found whenever...
You were teaching theater.
I was teaching theater. And I also am a caregiver. I babysit a lot, and I have the past, like, decade. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there was just something coming into my life, the all of these experiences that were kind of overlapping and... I don't know. So the idea didn't just come to me in one moment, but it was definitely, it had a lot of influences.
It was percolating.
Yes, it was percolating. That's the good word for it. Yeah.
How did you find out about this Alaska experience?
Well, yeah, that's what I should say. That's where my mind was going. sorry, I'm sometimes...
No, you're fine.
Very, yeah. So...
Me too.
Yeah. I was seeking opportunities. So after I worked in Montana, I was kind of seeking opportunities to go to nature, and I was looking at artist residencies, kind of with the idea that I would maybe create something for young children, because I was working with a company at the time who I'm still working with, who was creating plays for young children. And this was really opening up something for me creatively, working in this way. And I just started looking. I really wanted to work in a national park. But I was finding that a lot of these residencies, specifically the ones in nature, were geared more towards visual artists or musicians or writers, and not a lot were for performance artists. But some of them, and I think it's expanding, they're a lot more or opening up for performance arts too. But I happened to come across this one through the U.S. Forest Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's both of them, called Voices of the Wilderness. And this, it was just like I was actively seeking resident. I was searching for residencies. And this one, what really caught my attention was there was a kind of a service component or a community service component. So through the residency, you also were working with community members. Like, it wasn't just go to a cabin in the woods and create. Mm-hmm. It was, you're engaging with the community that you're stationed in. And I was, as a performance artist, audience community interaction is so important. And I was like, oh, I just thought it would be really awesome to work there. And so I applied, and much to my surprise, got it. I was very surprised.
And how long were you there?
I was there for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I was in Southwest Alaska. The town is called Dillingham, but I was stationed on Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. It was awesome. It was really amazing. I mean, I got to work with the community. I got to teach classes, and there were like these workshops, storytelling workshops for children and youth in their library and in their elementary school, which was just so cool. Mm-hmm. And then getting to work with the wilderness specialists that were on the wildlife refuge, and taking hikes with the biologist, and it was just awesome. I learned a ton. And then the part of my contract of being there is that then I would go back to my home community and create something. And that is when I created a play called The Edge of the Earth, which was kind of the first step in this initiative that I've started called Earth Stories. But The Edge of the Earth was is a play that I created for children ages 5 to 8 is really the appropriate kind of ages for this play. And it is basically it really stemmed from my desire to bring the Alaskan wilderness to children in New York City. So I really wanted to give them an experience of what it might be like to be in such a wild and rugged place as Alaska, you know, this like untamed, beautiful, wild place that maybe they'll never go to. And I mean, not many people go to Southwest Alaska, and that's okay. But how can I help them still connect to this place? How can they still maybe be curious about it or experience like a inkling of that like wonder of this place and connect to the life that lives there, even if they never get to like visit it in real life or like, you know, like how can they still think about it? And that was really the impetus of the whole.
Where did you end up performing it?
So I did a workshop showing at Brooklyn Arts Exchange, and then we had our first big public performance at Sugar Hill Children's Museum of Art and Storytelling. Mm-hmm. And with still, it's a process, but I'm still applying for other places to show it because it's definitely, it was built to be transportable. It was built to be in like a classroom.
So yeah. And is it a one person show?
It's a two person show. Okay. So it's a, the main character is called Hiker, and then there's our puppeteer, who's kind of the spirit of wilderness. And yeah, it's very simple in production. You know, I'm very interested in non-traditional, you know, theatrical settings, and I really wanted it to be accessible. Yeah. I really want it to be able to be seen in a classroom or in a library or, you know, this random room that this place has, you know, like I want it to be easy to be shown.
That sounds like such an amazing experience.
It was really, it was really cool.
So now you're taking this further, you're making this initiative. I know you just started a fundraising campaign.
Yes, indeed.
What's your plan? What are you excited about with this?
Yeah, I mean,
are you already working on another show?
I am. I'm already creating another play about the Amazon rainforest. Which will also be seen at Sugar Hill Children's Museum in August. And
you'll have to remind me. I know Ceci is super young for it, but we should.
Yeah, but she
can come check it out.
Yeah. It'll be like 40 minutes. You know, you can step in and out. It's very, very like a casual thing. You know, there's no pressure. It's not like going into a theater, a Broadway house or something. and it's very like sensorial. So there's a lot of sound and it's wonderful. You should totally come. In a lot of ways, I mean, it is to create community around this, a community of support. And because in addition to the stories that we're telling, I've started a monthly digest. It's called Seeds, but it's for like parents or educators or people who work with children or just any person who lives in a city and wants to connect to the natural world and activities you can do with your child and resources. I've come across so many amazing resources on connecting to our planet and nature and the environment, specifically for children. And this has been something that's been ongoing for me for many years. And it was kind of in this, I really wanted to really offer something to people, like even if they can't see a play or even if
in right, because that is very local at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you could take it on tour or whatever, but
yeah, exactly.
People across the country could benefit from the newsletter.
Right. And creating, like, it's definitely, I want it to be in conversation with people. You know, I love children's books and I'm always reading children's books, and there are so many amazing ones about our planet. And I've, you know, already we had our first newsletter or digest is what I'm calling it, but and I had several people respond, oh, and this book and this book. There was like a section of recommended books. And, you know, I'm really wanting it to be that kind of in conversation with each other. Oh, what works? What book do you really know? Or oh, that. Here's this great like resource of these articles about, you know, how to engage your child in creative play outside, you know, those kind of mm-hmm. those kind of things that I'm also really interested in and curious in, or curious about. But so Earth Stories, where I'm really excited about it, is that I kind of feel like, I want it to grow in terms of, you know, partnerships that we make with schools or with community organizations. I'm wanting it to grow in access so that more children can see these, interact with these plays and interact with these stories and interact with the content, the environment that they're set in or, mm-hmm. And I don't know, like where I see it going is that we're going to continue creating plays about different parts of our world. And really, I mean, and these are plays that are developmentally appropriate for these children at these ages, and that are truly investigating this world in which we're sharing a story about, or, you know, like really engaging in that sense of wonder and curiosity, and with the hope that they will too, you know. And even giving them an experience, like sound is something really big in this work, because a 5-year-old may never have heard the sound of a sparrow. Probably a sparrow. There are sparrows in New York City. But, you know, may never have heard the sound of a caribou. And a caribou makes a sound, you know. And that is something that I think is so wonderful about this storytelling is... I mean, it's the experience, this experience of being in this place, in wilderness, or as our next play will be kind of in the Amazon with a tree. But but also, it's giving them these experiences that they may never have had in their life, and who knows if they will, and also connecting them in from a personal perspective. Like I use this a lot. I say we're the heart as an entry point into these stories. So while there is a lot of educational value in them, these are not educational plays. These are really
right. Your goal isn't to teach these 10 facts about the rainforest.
No. It is establishing what I hope is some curiosity with this place and a connection to this world and to the character. Like this play that we're currently creating about the Amazon rainforest, the main character is a tree in the Amazon. And the hope here is that by connecting, by sharing a story from a tree's perspective, I don't know what a tree really thinks, obviously, but there's a lot of research out right now that is saying that trees do have a whole life that we can't even begin to comprehend.
Sure they
and
do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're thousands of years old. They have stories to tell. But in this instance, if we're sharing this proposed story that I am writing, and if a child is able to hear that, and I'm not shying away from the real threats that, you know, in this play, for instance, I am bringing up deforestation. I am bringing up, like...
Yeah, I was curious if you touched on, like, that yeah. sort of stuff or climate change.
Definitely. And children, they deserve to know that. You yeah. know, I mean, it's not... I think what I'm trying to do with these stories is approaching it from a place of how can we... I mean, it's this the entry point, the heart as an entry point, and engaging, like, how can we engage with compassion to this, to these places? How can, yeah. instead of just thinking about the, I mean, while I am bringing up deforestation, the play is not about people are chopping it down and you gotta, you know, it's definitely not an aggressive play by any means, but it is trying to tell a story of this tree, giving them just like a, just brief insight into maybe the life of this creature, yeah. you know, and how that creature lives and exists, and a danger that it's the tree's actually facing, and maybe leaving the play, you'll think about the tree that you see on your block a little differently.
Yeah,
maybe you'll think, oh, I won't, you know, kick it or tear off a branch. And maybe when they grow older, or, you know, even if they see it with a family member or whatever, but maybe there's a way to interact with the world with more compassion, because we're just thinking about thinking about the life of something different than us.
Yeah, that empathy is one of the best things that theater has to offer, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think children, you know, that this is another thing that I have been very called to or excited to create in this theater for young audiences. I feel very strongly that children deserve quality art and quality theatrical experiences. And this is something that I, you know, these plays, then the team that I work with, you know, we're throwing our skill, our passion in this, you know, we're
That's
really
fantastic.
Making, yeah, I mean, we really want to give them an experience that is moving, you know?
No, well, even you were talking about children's books and me,
yeah.
anyone who spends any time with them, you could, as soon as you pick up one of the bad ones, you're like,
oh yeah.
Because there are just such wonderful children's God. Books.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sometimes we'll go to the library and we won't have much time to, like, sit and read the entire book there, but we'll choose a couple that look interesting and bring them home. And every once in a while, we chose the wrong one, and it's a just, like, a surfacey, clunky,
yeah,
terrible book. And it really is disrespectful to kids.
It is.
When right next to it, you can see an example of, like, oh, this is real.
Right.
Storytelling with the pictures and with the words and, like, what's possible.
Right.
Yeah.
And the same goes for theater. I think there are real artists out there making and striving to, you know, create quality experiences for them in the theater. And I think there are some that unfortunately don't. And I mean, that's how it is in all art, I would say, but even in theater for grownups. But that is kind of the other element of this Earth Stories is... through these storytelling experiences, making sure that we are treating them with respect and giving them the integrity that that they deserve.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Well, and I love that you're making work, you're making your own work, you're collaborating. Do you find that this has been impacting the way that you approach your more traditional acting path when you're just going in the audition room and trying to get jobs from other people?
Yeah.
Has it influenced the way your confidence or the way you're approaching it?
Definitely. I mean, I think for one, just making your own work in any capacity, I think is empowering in some way, you know, is like, there's a sense of ownership that I feel, and like, oh, I am being an artist, you know, I am being creative, I'm using my creativity in some way. But for me, kind of the huge inspirations that continue to, I mean, just seem like, you know, a bottomless well of inspiration are working with children and working with nature, you know, like using nature as that inspiration.
Both. I know you've really chosen two wonderful,
yeah, I know.
Wonderful,
I mean,
partners.
Yeah.
Inspiring partners.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I never have to do anything else because there's so much in both of these, you know, there's, it's endless. It's given me a real, in my other artistic practice, what has it done for me? I mean, yes, it has given me a sense of empowerment and ownership of my own creativity and my own artistry. And I think it's also added, like, levity to other stuff. You know, there's like a, yeah, maybe that'll work out, but, you know, I also am doing this other thing that I am pouring my heart into in so many ways. And if it doesn't, that's okay. If it does, great. You know, like, I don't know. There's, I mean, I'm sure that will change. And there, obviously, I still want other things. But for now, it's kind of, I'm in a kind of nice balance of feeling
great.
Very, yeah, kind of a little less graspy than I once was.
That's what we're all looking for.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to avoid.
It
when
is.
You're an actor in New York City, especially when it's like, obviously you want to be fulfilled artistically, but it's like, I need to make money.
Yeah.
That's, I feel like that's where the graspy part comes in, where you're just like that little bit of desperation and then it works against you.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Although now, you know, it's other desperations. It's like, oh, running a crowdfunding campaign. You know,
right.
Like, oh, jeez.
Well, that's the interesting thing about starting your own endeavor like this, mm-hmm. is like you have the artistic part, but now you have to figure out all the producer parts.
Yeah. It's definitely this, the launching of it, and also even crowdfunding thing aside, also the, you know, applying for grant funding and residencies and trying to start the process of dealing with the Department of Education in New York City. Like these things that are
just... must be so complicated.
Well, it's just...
it's like
it is complicated.
I'm sure there are background checks and
all
this stuff.
Oh, yeah, but it's just so much like regulation and administrative things that I'm learning how to do. Like, I'm trying to be patient with myself. I'm definitely more used to like the creative side of things, but it is just using a different part of my brain that can be draining at times. I really admire all those people who work on the admin side of things. It's pretty incredible, but yeah.
Are there any resources you've found that have kind of been helping you figure out the grant writing process and stuff like that?
I mean,
it's mostly like talking to friends and stuff.
It's talking to friends, and I am a master at like Googling and finding. this is how I find residencies, how I like find articles for this, you know, digest that. I mean,
just
I really
go down the rabbit hole.
Yes, and I so I have read so many things on grant writing and applications, and you know. Whatever else there is out there, but I will say that's all been great. But yes, I think the best resources for me have been talking to people, because I'm really able, there's a conversation happening. I'm able to kind of ask specific questions. Somebody can give their own personal insights into something.
Or even look at something that they've done that's been successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really helpful.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a process of learning that it takes a village, you know, like I need the support. I need community. I need, it's not just in my head. I have to reach out. I have to have other people. Whether it be talking, asking questions to somebody that's done something similar, or, showing my like application, can you give me like feedback on it? Or if it's just talking to somebody and us both, you know, banging our head against the wall and being like, this is so hard, you know, like whatever it is. But those have definitely, I'm much more creative and productive and healthy when I am not just living in my head by myself, worrying and overthinking things.
Mm-hmm. We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but since your older sister is also an artist, I was curious how that is for you guys. I mean, you are both actors. You both ended up going to the same college. And I know you're very close. Like, what is that like to have kind of a partner in crime who's also your sibling?
Yeah, I mean, my sister, she is my best friend. She has been my whole life. You know, I think it's had its challenges, obviously. I think she would say the same thing.
And how far are you in age?
We're 2 years in age, but we were 3 grade years. Okay. So, doing the same thing. I think as we've gotten older and out of school, I can speak for myself. I think it's been easier in terms of comparison. There's not as much because we're both living our lives. We're not in like just this one contained environment where everybody knows who you are and who your big sister is or who your little sister, you know. So we can kind of find our own interests and communities. And I think what's been really great is that we also understand each other in a way, and kind of the struggles and the accomplishments, you know, like we're able to support each other in both of those ways that I think other people that aren't in that aren't doing this just don't really understand in the same way.
Totally. So, Are there any lessons you've learned in the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to share?
I don't know that if it's like a lesson, but something that I keep, it keeps revealing itself to me. We kind of spoke of this earlier, but is really listening to myself. And I'm gaining a better understanding of listening to my like instincts. I think for many years I suffocate them or push them down, or, you know, I didn't know that that's what was, what was speaking. And now I think I'm listening a little better, and I know in my gut, you know, if there's something that a decision that I'm making or something I really want to do, I have an easier time recognizing that now than I did. And I think that is because I've kind of given myself more space and stillness. I've been a little more proactive about that.
That's a good one. That's important. I feel like, and I still do this to a certain extent, I feel like I'm far too practical. That for a long time I didn't listen to any sort of instinct or gut instinct because I was very focused on like doing the correct thing or the most practical thing that made sense.
Totally. I definitely relate to that. Accomplishing my to-do list. Mm-hmm. Like, I am great at checking off that stuff.
I do love checking it off, but it can take over.
Yeah. And it definitely makes life much more interesting and full and rich if I am not living off of my to-do list all the time.
Do you have any artistic mentors who have been important to your career?
Well, I definitely would say my sister. That is true, just in the reasons we just kind of spoke of. But other people, I really look to, I don't have a personal relationship with her, but I am constantly reading her work and going back to it all the time. Do you know the author Terry Tempest Williams?
I don't. The name sounds familiar, but I don't think so.
She's a naturalist, environmentalist, like conservationist, American writer. She's kind of has her roots in the American West, but I just find her work, particularly in the past, like I would say 3 or 4 years, just a constant source of mentorship. Honestly, mm-hmm. just reading it. I got to meet her this year at the Brooklyn Public Library for her new book came out, and I totally geeked out over it. But there's just something in the way she speaks of our world, our planet, our earth, and how there's a real connection and rootedness to it, and this like sense of interconnectedness with all things, not just people that look like us, but mm-hmm. every creature, you know, that we all share this home. And there's something in her writing. She's also very feminine in her writing. She talks a lot about the mother. She talks a lot about that kind of power in the womb, you know. And they're all of it. I find inspirational as an artist and as a human being. Like I highly recommend her writings for anybody. She has a lot of books and they're wonderful.
I'll have to check them out.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite of her books?
I just read Erosion, which is her newest book. I really liked Refuge too, which was one of her first, and it was kind of about her. She wrote after her mother passed. And it was both of those are maybe my two favorites. Yeah. Although I also liked Hours. I don't know. Yeah. I would start with Refuge though, you want.
So how do you stay connected to nature as someone living in the city? You're always thinking about the kids, but
yeah.
How are some of the ways? Where are some of your favorite places to go in or right outside the city?
I do like going outside the city, taking the metro north, like
Hudson Valley,
mm-hmm. exactly. Even like taking the Long Island Rail out to somewhere in Long Island. Emily and I, my sister and I, we would do this a lot, and a lot of my partner and I also, just kind of finding, like Googling a great state park or, you know, and just taking a train out there. There's a lot accessible through New York Transit. It's just, there's a lot of opportunity if you seek it, you know, and if you have the time to do it. But also I really love to read from naturalists, reading, like finding environmentalists, conservationists, their books or their articles. That is something that I... keeps me grounded in a very authentic way. And making sure that I get out of the city, making sure that that becomes priority for me. And going to parks. Yeah, I live right by Greenwood Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Greenwood Cemetery is amazing. You can go to a point in Greenwood Cemetery and I feel like I am nowhere in New York City. It's awesome. And they have this huge, the Greenwood Cemetery, conservatory maybe, or conservancy, No, what is it? Anyway, they Greenwood Cemetery has this huge, they have all these native plants there. And, you know, native plants bring a lot more native insects, and there, and which also impacts, continues to go down the line, native, like more birds, more wildlife. And they're, I mean, it's just a really cool place to go and feel like you're not in a city. Yeah. And really listen to the trees or the wind or the geese or whatever it is, but and seeing butterflies. There's a whole parrot colony that lives at Greenwood Cemetery. That's the other crazy, that obviously not native, but I learned this a few months ago. There was like parrots that were at JFK. They were being transported somewhere and they got released somehow. And they now have a colony in Greenwood Cemetery. And I saw them. You can go, like, the big entrance. There's a huge nest. They're parrot nests. I mean, it's, like, oh super gosh. Cool. Like, that should be a children's book, I feel like.
Yeah, totally. The parrot community in Greenwood Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you always been, do you consider yourself a writer? Or is kind of in creating these plays a different sort of process than like sitting down and writing a script?
Creating these plays is a little different because I'm really trying to think of the experience that a child might have, and they aren't always super plot driven. They're more, what is the experience? What am I?
Like a moment to moment.
Mm-hmm. And so that is a interesting way of writing for me, because I'm writing so much of like what the experience is. So it's a lot of like, and these plays have puppets, and so there's, and they're animals, the animals do not speak, and there's a lot of writing movements of things or interaction. But personal writing, I've journaled a lot in my life. I write a lot when I am, when I'm moved or when I'm very emotional, or I go to writing a lot. But it always comes out very, I mean, I don't know that I've ever considered myself like, I'm a really great writer, but it is a way in which I express myself in a lot of, ways.
No, I was just curious.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like push myself to write more now, because I've really mostly, it's always come out as like journaling or poetry or stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, like The Edge of the Earth, the first play, very much poured out of me from this experience that I had. And it came very naturally. While there was certainly things that I had to, edit and really craft, it was a pretty like painless experience. This play that I'm writing about the Amazon, it's been a little bit more laborious. It's been great. I've actually really loved this process of writing and researching. And
well, that's what I was going to ask, is like, what's it like after that first process being something that you experienced, getting to do that research firsthand, and now writing about something that's so far away that you haven't gotten to visit yourself?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to that, like, curiosity. I've just been trying to feed myself as much as I can about that place, about the Amazon, about the biodiversity there, about the animals there, about the trees. I've read so many books about trees. I love trees. I could send you a lot of books about trees that you should read. When I was commissioned to write this play, the big thing that I wanted to make sure that I did, because I knew I wasn't going to get to travel to the Amazon for this one, unfortunately. But I wanted to make sure that I was really, that I grounded it in research and like in that actual place. And I wanted to just feed myself as much as I could, feed my curiosity, go down the paths that I felt interested in. And it did ultimately lead me to, this is going to be a play about a tree.
The Amazon is such a huge topic, and like you said, so diverse. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you gave yourself the room to explore it. I've settled on something specific within that.
Yeah. And I'm still not finished with it. I'm about to start rehearsals for it, but it's a collaborative. We're going to get in the room and explore. But
And when you said commissioned, is that by Sugar Hill?
By the museum, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really great. But my hope is still to continue taking it places afterwards as part of our stories. And then, then we have a play about the Arctic that is coming up. I'm going...
That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't even ask you about that.
I forgot about that, too. Which is crazy.
Tell me all about it.
Yes. Received our artistic residency through the Arctic Circle Residency is what they're called. Mm-hmm. And I will be going to Svalbard, Norway in October. And I'll be working with other scientists and artists from around the world. And we'll be like researching and studying the Arctic. It's kind of crazy. And I am in the midst of writing this play about the Amazon, trying to put together some like research that I'll be doing while I'm there so that I can really...
It's self-determined though.
Yeah, yes, pretty much self-determined. We will be assigned, I believe this was my understanding of this, we'll be assigned kind of like a group that we could have like a, if we all are kind of studying the same thing, we can all be assigned like a group with like another scientist who's also studying that or another artist. But I think that will be determined slightly later when we all submit what exactly we'll be studying. We had to submit a proposal for this as well, but I think there's some opportunity to, with some like wiggle room of what exactly you're going to be looking
at. That's so exciting. How long will you be there?
3 weeks. Yeah. I have a lot of preparation I need to do. but then when I get back, I will create a play about the Arctic for young children.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So you're having some success with these residencies.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think...
I mean, I'm sure like any process, you've applied to a lot.
I have.
To get to the ones that say yes.
And I'm much better on paper than on interview. But... or I'm much better when I get to write things out, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I also think there is something, like, I don't think a lot of performance artists apply to these things. I think there's a...
No, you're probably right.
Yeah, I think I'm a unique candidate in that way, but...
You do need to have a willingness to pursue something on your own, too, because so often we're, you know, in a community or a group, theater at least.
Yeah. I definitely, there was a part of me when I first started, when I was looking into applying for these residencies, I was like, oh, nobody really wants a performance artist. But then trying to not limit myself and being like, you know what? I'm going to just submit. They can say yes or they can say no.
Yeah.
You know, that's the worst that can happen. But it's very cool. Yeah.
Well, there's two small questions I usually ask at the end. The first one is, when you do find yourself kind of going to that darker place, are there any tangible things that you return to again and again, like a book you reread or music you listen to or something like that?
I might go to Terry Tempest Williams, and I might go to... I have like a running... document, I guess. Yeah, it's on Google document of like quotes that I just collect that I often will read for inspiration or for
reminders.
Comfort. Yeah, reminders, yeah. Exactly. And another, I think of my mother a lot. That is a big a big sense of groundedness when I think of my mother, who passed 5 years ago. But she definitely continues to be a source of comfort and support for me, and love. And like, when things are difficult, or when I am feeling really challenged or feeling really overwhelmed, thinking of her is a huge sense of comfort.
Was she artistic? Was she a creative?
She would say no, but I mean, I think she was. My mother was constantly curious. I mean, that is certainly where I got it, but there was nothing she wasn't interested in, and there she asked questions all the time. She really valued new experiences, really valued meeting different people. Like, it was,
That's so huge. Mm-hmm. It always makes me kind of sad when I meet people who aren't interested.
Yeah.
Who'd have no curiosity. It's right. Really sad.
Yeah.
Of like reaching beyond what they know.
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like in so many ways that's like what makes us human beings, you know, that our curiosity in some ways. Well, animals are very curious too. Makes us alive, and that's better.
And then the last question is there anything that you've seen or experienced recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
So one thing I've plugged them a lot, but they did not ask me, but I'm going to continue saying it. But at Sugar Hill Children's Museum, there is in their main hall, which this museum, by the way, is like, I think, 5 years old. It is
amazing.
Where
is it exactly? Because I've been reading a lot about it recently.
Sugar Hill, which I honestly, I didn't know was a neighborhood, but until this museum, but it's a neighborhood, like, it's on 155th Street. It's like Harlem.
That's right. Like East Harlem.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
I always thought of that as Harlem, but I think it's also Sugar Hill. Okay. It is, I mean, talk about quality art for children, this place. They are amazing at everything I've seen there, and I've seen a lot of exhibits I've just been blown away by. But one of the exhibits in the main hall, until it'll be there till October, it's by Tatiana Aroche, and she's a Colombian artist and it's these huge murals of the Amazon. It's beautiful. And going there with a child is really a pretty awesome experience. And then the other thing I saw play, you can't see it anymore, unfortunately, but another play for children, but also wonderful for adults. It was a play called Cartography, and it was at the New Victory. It was a play about youth refugees coming into the country and kind of their experiences of both leaving their homeland and coming to a place like America where they are not always welcomed. Mm. And it was everything about the play. I mean, obviously the story was very powerful, and the play itself was like beautifully crafted. It was very theatrical and also inventive, and it was really lovely. I wish everybody could see it.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, Lisa, thank you.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
Conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. Anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller. Music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez.
See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.